Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We will get right to John Heilman from New York Magazine in a minute, author of Game Change, the bestseller about the Obama campaign. He's got a major new piece out today about Obama and Wall Street that focuses on kind of the rise and the fall of their love affair and also on the specifics of the bank reform bill as it moves now into conference committee. This is going to be good, I think, with John Heilman coming right up. Now, as the Senate and House begin talks on the final shape of a bank reform bill, an ocean of corporate lobbyists is flooding Washington like a BP oil spill. Think thousands of barrels a day of Wall Street wealth washing up on the shores of the Potomac. What an image to try to weaken the reforms. But in this week's New York Magazine, political reporter John Heilman examines some of the limits of what even Wall Street's shock and awe political spending can buy. And he takes a close look at President Obama's roller coaster relationship with the titans of the investment firms. In a nutshell, they have fallen in and out of love with him at a remarkably quick pace in each direction. And he with them, by the way. The article is called Wall Street is from Mars, Obama is from Venus. John Heilman is also co-author of the book Game Change, the best-selling account of the 2008 presidential campaign. Hey, John, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's always a pleasure to be here. I'm glad that it's not Take John Heilman's Money Day. That's all I can say.
It's Take Heilman's Information Day.
And good, that's better. I like that. I prefer it that way.
You have more of that to offer, I think.
I do. That's true.
And this story really begins in the earliest days of the campaign. Your book is about the campaign. 2006, when potential candidate Obama meets some of Wall Street's biggest names. Remind us briefly of that prehistory.
Yeah, you know, Brian, you know, at the end of 2006, when Obama was still trying to decide whether to run for president and confronting the question of whether he could take on Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine, you know, he came to New York in December of 2006 and met with half a dozen or ten or so of the biggest names on Wall Street at George Soros' office in Manhattan. He hadn't decided to run yet, but he was kind of testing the waters. And you know, he knew that he would need to demonstrate, first and foremost, that he could raise enough money to take on Hillary Clinton so that he would be taken seriously by the political class. I mean, that was a big hurdle for him because everyone assumed Hillary Clinton would raise more money than any Democrat had ever raised before. So,
and why did, from their point of view, did Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman, fall in love with Barack Obama?
Well, you know, I think that some of those guys were very Jamie Dimon gave a lot of money. It was ostensibly for Hillary Clinton in the primary fight. I think though that there was a sense among a lot of people on Wall Street that Obama that they were worried about, like a lot of Democrats, where they were worried about whether Hillary Clinton could win a general election.
But wait a minute, why are they Democrats? Why weren't they for the Republicans?
Well, why? What a good question. You know, Brian, I can't read the minds of many Wall Street CEOs and why they're Democrats, but it's certainly the case that just, you know, over the last 20 years in America, the Wall Street crowd has, contrary to a lot of popular perception, has been much more pro-Democratic than pro-Republican. There are, it's true, I think, that if you look at contribution levels across the country, the business community is pro-Republican. Wall Street, along with Hollywood, have been the two main corporate sources of funding for Democratic candidates, both in the House and Senate, in the congressional campaigns, and also at the presidential level. It's been the kind of one of the untold stories in American political life is that Democrats have been very well supported by the highest levels and the mid levels of Wall Street for a long time.
And as you report, they had tremendous access to President Obama in the early days, and of course he took office during the height of the financial crisis. Jamie Dimon, again from J.P. Morgan Chase, in there a lot. The CEO of UBS in there a lot. And yet we got somehow from that to this soundbite of the president on 60 Minutes last October.
I did not run for office to be helping out a bunch of fat cat bankers on Wall Street.
as you referenced that soundbite in your article, John, how did the love affair sour so quickly?
Well, you know, that soundbite, which was December of last year, Phil, that was in some, for some of them, was kind of the last straw in the relationship. I mean, I think, Brian, I think the fascinating thing here is that that beyond the question of Democrat or Republican, most of Wall Street was happy at Obama's election, with Obama's election. Democrats were thrilled, and many Republicans were relieved because they thought John McCain would be a horrible president given the way he performed during the financial crisis and during the campaign. So they had a lot of high hopes and expectations with Obama when he came in. And over the course of this brief 16 months, and this is kind of the core of the piece in a lot of ways, is that that relationship not only went from being kind of euphoric when he first got elected, to being one of real bitter acrimony. And so now you have Democrats and Republicans alike on Wall Street who think that Obama, I mean, they denounce him in private largely, sometimes in public, in the most extreme terms. I mean, these are people who, you know, they recall him, they say he is anti-wealth, he is anti-business, he's hostile to capitalism. Some of them will go so far as to mouth the Tea Party rhetoric of him being a socialist. And I found that in the course of reporting the piece, I found that rather extraordinary. So the piece tries to kind of look at how it could be that this is the case. And the reason why it's such a curious thing is that, I mean, to me as a Wall Street person, nor as a partisan Democrat, that I just think objectively speaking, if you think about the political tolerance in the country right now, Obama has been kind of moderate on Wall Street. He has not been a hot-eyed populist over the course of these 16 months. The regulations he's proposed have been regulatory, but have not been punitive. His rhetoric has been, occasionally he's deployed things like fat cat bankers, but but at the same time he said things like he doesn't begrudge Lloyd Blankfein and Jamie Dimon their bonuses. And so what's curious to me is that a guy who I think, you know, given where a lot of the populist right and a lot of the populist left are, which is they'd like to see Obama, you know, take a meat axe to these guys. I don't mean metaphorically. I mean, in some cases, literally, physically. How it is that Wall Street could think that this guy has become, you know, Bernie Sanders in some way. And the piece tries to kind of explore the psychology of that. Some of it, I think, has to do with what they perceive as harsh rhetoric. Some of it has to do with the financial reform. And some of it, I think, has to do with context, which is that this is the first president who in 30 years has any kind of a hands-on approach to Wall Street. I mean, if you go back and look at Democrats and Republicans alike going back to Jimmy Carter, every single administration has been either laissez-faire or actively deregulatory. And I think Wall Street got really used to the notion that the government either helped it by deregulating or just stayed out of its way. And so it's been a real shock to the Wall Street system to have someone who is actually trying to affirmatively regulate it, even in relatively pragmatic and moderate ways.
So what part of this doesn't Wall Street get? Because I think this is the Obama and Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner position. The president saved their lives with TARP,
yes,
and by refusing to nationalize the banks, as many progressives wanted. Now he wants new rules to protect America from their bad judgment in the future, the banks' bad judgment. Why is that such an incomprehensible notion in Lower Manhattan?
Well, I think it starts with there are a bunch of different theories about this, right? And part of it goes to the question of, do these people not understand what the level of public outcry, and do they not understand their own complicity in the crisis? So part of it is, I think, that they are still incredibly insular and they don't realize the extent to which the country is angry at them and blames them for what happened in the course of the financial crisis, which of course is not even really over in some respects, as we see in Europe. I mean, the financial crisis is still, by some theories, is still ongoing to this day. So I think first they're insular and they don't get the degree of anger. Second, I think they don't particularly care. There's an attitude of, well, you know, these people who are angry at us don't understand. They don't understand how complex our business is. They don't understand how important the role that we play in keeping markets liquid and in making the financial system work. They don't get that. And so there's an element of, you know, the one of the analogies that's in the piece that I quote a financier who says, you know, their attitude is slightly like a doctor giving a child a shot. The child may be screaming, but that doesn't mean that the shot is still not good for the child. And you can't not give, you're not going to not give the child a shot just because he's upset. The child doesn't know what he's talking about. So there's an element of kind of patronizing. People are just don't understand. And I think thirdly that there is a sense of that they did nothing, that either they did nothing wrong or the extent to which they got themselves in trouble, they have remediated that in their view, right? Their attitude is the trader's attitude. It's this transactional attitude. Okay, you know, we had a problem. You offered us TARP. We took the TARP because we had to. We gave the money back. We're done now. This trade has been consummated. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And the Obama administration's attitude was, well, wait a minute. You know, we did more than do a simple trade here. You know, the whole the U.S. government and its policies allow you, provide insurance in some sense for you to do things that were incredibly, incredibly risky. And so it's not just paying us back for the loan that we gave you is not sufficient. We need to change the system. And their attitude is, well, there's nothing really wrong with the system. There, you know, there were, you know, things went a little haywire. Things occasionally go a little haywire. You guys have to understand that there's nothing here that really needs to be fixed in any fundamental way.
John Heilman from New York Magazine, his article called Wall Street is from Mars, Obama is from Venus. You know him probably as co-author of the best-selling book Game Change. John, one of the really interesting things in your book is one interesting thing in this article is your portrayal of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, who you call possibly the most misunderstood man in Washington. And one of the anecdotes is he can't seem to shake this reputation that he used to work for Goldman Sachs, which he never did. He actually never worked on Wall Street. He's been a regulator his whole life.
Correct, and it's one of the great paradoxes. I mean, there's the anecdote in the piece is that Geithner actually said to me, you know, there's this great myth that I worked, not just worked on Wall Street, but worked for Goldman Sachs in particular. And the anecdote you're referring to, Geithner had been fighting this misperception for a year and a half, and he went to dinner not that long ago with Rahm Emanuel, the White House chief of staff, and Rahm Emanuel's wife, Amy Ruhl, and they were sitting over dinner, and Amy at some point said, well, you know, at some point this will all be over, and you'll be out of the crosshairs, and you know, you should be looking forward to that day. You'll get to go back to that nice perch that they have waiting for you back at Goldman Sachs. And at that point, you know, Geithner's attitude was, well, if the White House chief of staff's wife thinks that I work for Goldman Sachs, there's no way to win here. Everybody must think this. And what's so curious about it is that, of course, you're correct. Tim Geithner has never worked on Wall Street, and he was, of course, Wall Street's regulator when he was the president of the New York Fed. But this is a job that, you know, has a $400,000 a year salary. Now, that's a lot of money to a lot of people, but it's not a $20 billion bonus. Either, or even a multi-million-dollar bonus. Right. He's not a member of the Wall Street Club, and that's what's so funny. If you go to Wall Street people and say, you know, what do you think about this perception that Tim Geithner is a Wall Street insider? They sort of laugh because he was their regulator. Yeah. I mean, they kind of look at him as like, you know, as a kind of almost like a child care provider or something. They kind of say, well, he was a decent regulator, but you know, he's not part of our clique.
And yet, he does kind of come out of that mindset and is more sympathetic to them, as you report, than maybe somebody like Elizabeth Warren. But to bring this back to the money, to finish up, now the House and Senate are hashing out the final version of the bill with the real decisions on how tough this is going to be really still to be made, I think it's fair to say. So the media and nobody else can take their eyes off the ball here. And you have a dollar figure in your article of how much Wall Street is spending just to kill one provision, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. Do you remember the number?
It may have appeared that I was saying that it was about the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. I was really speaking of overall lobbying for the first 9 months of last year. It was over $300 million, and I'm sure that number now must be, at this point, we don't have those figures yet, but I'm sure the number in total, you're going to be probably by the end of this process, the financial services industry broadly defined, will have spent upwards of $1 billion on trying to lobby against all of the provisions in this bill. And it's, you know, it's been an extraordinary fight. And, you're right, we're not home yet, and there's still a lot of things. You know, the Blanche Lincoln's derivatives provision, I think, you know, you saw Jamie Dimon yesterday was quoted saying that he had a kind of optimistic outlook on how financial reform was going to end up. That should worry people, I think, who want to see tough regulation, because Jamie Dimon is relatively optimistic that augurs poorly for the thing having any real teeth.
And in our last minute, with Republican, listen to me, Wall Street money having gone so much to the Democrats, as you said before, and so much to Obama, it's now going to go 90% perhaps to the Republicans in the coming election cycle, according to your article.
Yeah.
And with the Citizens United ruling in the Supreme Court this year, corporations can suddenly spend unlimited amounts on their own political advertising during election campaigns. Do you think Wall Street will finance anti-bank reform factions, anti-Obama factions with huge sums of money now as a result of this ruling? We have 30 seconds.
I think that there's going to be a big swing in terms of Wall Street money going towards Republicans, going away from Democrats, broadly speaking. I think the question is, you know, with the thing you're referring to, Brian, I think the question is whether Wall Street will think it's actually effective to have advertising that's labeled as from the industry backing those kinds of efforts. And that may be not a politically efficacious way to go, but there's no question that much of what Republicans have done in opposing this legislation, even though they knew that the legislation was going to pass, was specifically designed to try to cleave Wall Street money away from Democrats, away from Obama. And I think there's a reasonable chance that that will be pretty successful, and that's a big problem for both for the White House and a big problem for Democrats.
John Heilman, co-author of Game Change, and author now of the article in the new New York Magazine, Wall Street is from Mars, Obama is from Venus. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
And more on Elena Kagan and Citizens United coming up next, in addition to whether Facebook's new information sharing policies might fundamentally transform the Internet. We'll talk about both those things with political and Internet guru Lawrence Lessig from Harvard. Stay with us.